The Aged Care Royal Commission has found the federal government had no devoted plan to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic in aged care and that infection control protocols were at times deplorable. In a special report, the commission made six recommendations, including a funding boost to help keep visiting their loved ones during the pandemic. The federal government has accepted those recommendations, but Aged Care Minister Richard Colbeck says the report shows Australia is in a good position compared to other nations.
Again, we extend our condolences to all of the families who've lost loved ones through COVID-19, but we do appreciate the statistics that have been noted by the Commission in the report as a global comparison.
Aged Care Minister Richard Colbeck speaking there yesterday. We had hoped to bring you an interview with him this morning, but he ultimately declined that invitation. Joseph Ibrahim is the head of Health Law and Ageing Research Unit at Monash University. He gave evidence to the Royal Commission's COVID inquiry. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Hamish.
Does this exonerate the federal government over what's gone on in aged care in any way?
Oh my God, it does not, not at all. I think that the report is quite mild and should have been far more incisive and critical of the government. I think the quoting of statistics remains selective, and the statistics that are in the Royal Commission's report are taken essentially from the government's submission, which occurred post post-hearings. And I'm not sure whether you're aware, Hamish, that the government submitted a 80-page document 3 days after submissions closed, and I don't believe that that's been vetted by the public or had an opportunity for experts to rebut the evidence that's in there.
So what does that mean for the findings then? If you're saying that this government submission was not scrutinised publicly or by experts?
Well, I think it casts doubt on the level of, I guess, inquiry that's possible, and it's essentially gives the government the upper hand in having the last word without having any critical appraisal of what they've said or done, and allows them to run the narrative. I think that the Royal Commission has missed an opportunity to highlight the abuses and the neglect that occurs to residents and to assert their rights. There is no recommendation within those findings about having representatives of residents and families on the national body. There isn't anything there that asserts that older people have the same rights and shouldn't be discriminated against. Everything in those recommendations typically is done to address doing something for the resident, not what the residents have asked for or considers their opinion in it. And again, I come back to the issue around access to healthcare. There's a statement in the report saying that there shouldn't be discrimination, but the decisions around how those protocols are developed, they're being developed without the residents, without their families.
I do want to move on to some more of the specifics, but I think it's just worth being specific about this. Are you saying this is a bit of a stitch-up in terms of the way that the government's submission has been handled?
Well, I don't know the details of it. I know it's a short time frame, and that I don't understand why the government saw the need to put a submission post-hearings. They had ample opportunity beforehand. They were the ones that asked the Royal Commission to look into it. They should have been far better prepared in what they were going to say and when they were going to say it. They forced themselves into the August hearings in Sydney. They behaved in a manner that's not consistent with, I think, respect for the commission or courts. Those questions are best put to the Commission and to the government.
The Aged Care Minister, though, does say that controlling community transmission is the key to keeping people in aged care safe. That is right, isn't it? That if you don't have broader community transmission, you're not going to have these problems in aged care.
Well, that statement's the same as saying if we address climate change, we don't have to worry about the bushfire that's on our doorstep. In theory and principle, it is correct that if you don't have the virus, you don't have the illness. But community transmission is not the whole answer or picture. We know that there are 800 homes in Victoria and 200 of them have had a case with COVID-19. So that's a quarter of the homes. Victoria has 2 million households And so the equivalent rate would be 200,000 plus homes with that infection if community transmission was the sole explanation. A really low rate of community transmission still is dangerous for aged care. It's not enough to say that handling community transmission is sufficient.
So given that we're told the emphasis here is about learning lessons and ensuring there's no repeat of what's gone on in Victoria, if there was an outbreak of community transmission in any other part of Australia right now, would we be facing the same degree of problems potentially in the aged care sector wherever the breakout was?
I think we'd be facing the same order of magnitude. It may be 10 or 20% better based on what we've learned to date. The issue is not what we've learned. The issue is, have we put into action the lessons that we've learned? And have we checked that those lessons have been applied correctly? If you look at the Senate inquiry reports this week, there's still significant numbers of people that haven't been trained in infection control. The amount of money that the federal government allocated to be spent still has not been spent.
Can I just draw you on some of the nuances here? Because we heard some audio of the minister reflecting on the statistics and thanking the commission for pointing out that Australia was doing comparatively well. My reading of the statistics previously, and I think it's fair to say a lot of the reporting, had been that Australia had not fared well per capita in terms of those within the aged care system. Can you explain where the nuance is there?
Well, it depends on what so this is not going to be interesting to your listeners, but it depends whether you include the whole country or the state of Victoria. It depends whether you're counting an individual or a household. And it depends whether you're looking at the rate of infection or the rate of death. So depending on which statistic you select, you can cast a story. I think the important thing here is not to be concerned so much about the statistics, is the commission reported and the government reported favourable statistics compared to countries that had no forewarning and had a much greater outbreak. So the UK, France, for example, they had COVID rampaging through their country well before it arrived on our doorstep. We had at least 6 months to prepare for Victoria. We should be judging our performance based on our potential and what we could have done and what was done, not on comparing us to the UK and certainly not comparing us to the US. Where is then the comparison with Denmark or the comparison with Hong Kong or the comparison with New Zealand? You can choose the comparison to make yourself look better or worse. I don't think it's valid to go with international comparisons. Also, Australia's uniquely situated as an island continent, which means that our ability to control the virus and its entry is far, far greater than it is in the Americas or Europe.
The report calls for the government to set up a formal plan guided by an expert advisory body for the aged sector to deal with COVID-19. Can you just talk us through what it's suggesting and whether that will actually make a difference?
Well, I think it will make a difference. And the basic principles, and anyone that's done first aid at school will know that in an emergency, you need someone to be in charge and you need a clear plan and to be allocating responsibility to different people to address the problems. The first thing that they need to do is to get sufficient people with the skill sets to address the pandemic, and that includes having a residence and having human rights lawyers to make sure that the issues are proportionate to what's needed. You then need to address the issue around command structure as to who's going to be in charge in terms of the country within each state and territory. You then want to be looking at the relationship between the health departments, both the state and federal, because they have intersecting roles, and that who is going to actually lead the management for the outbreak and who's going to lead it on the ground. So those decisions about who's in charge need to be made at least three, possibly four levels. The national body should be designing protocols that are appropriate for the different problems that we see. And the first one really is the visitation. There's a voluntary code, it's not mandatory, so we don't know how it's being applied across the country. The second issue that they need to deal with is how do they determine whether homes are or are not prepared and who needs resources, and to be having a formal and detailed assessment of their outbreak plans. The next issue that you'd want to look at is the decisions around transfers to hospital and access to medical care. And again, there is a large gap here, which is that residents and families have not been consulted in the decision-making. Decisions are being made around them. And I think there's a form of discrimination occurring here where if you have a residential care address, you don't get the same care as you would if you lived in your own home. I think that needs to be highlighted.
Professor Ibrahim, we will have to leave it there. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Hamish.
And I should also mention that along with inviting Richard Colbeck on the program, we did also invite the head of the regulator, Janet Anderson, to speak as well, and she also declined. Joseph Ibrahim is the head of Health and Law and Ageing, the research unit at Monash University.